Well, according to the National Science Foundation, the average person has about 60,000 thoughts per day. That seems pretty low in my own estimation. Can't stop thinking. How to let go of anxiety and free yourself from obsessive rumination. Your new book. Nancy, how did you get the inspiration to write this book?
Well, you know, I have been a meditator my whole life. And as a psychotherapist, I see how much suffering goes on as a result of our thoughts and how we torture ourselves with our thoughts by believing our thoughts, by being in love with our thoughts, by chasing every thought that comes down the pike. And in my own life as a meditator, I too overthought everything and the meditation allowed me and all these practices I offer in the book to be able to hear the thoughts that were appearing in my mind and be able to decide which ones I wanted to follow, to choose among, you know, the 95% negative thoughts and 80% repetitive thoughts, but to actually have some freedom about what I pursued. And that changed my life. I also realized that I was doing a lot of thinking because I thought that more thinking about problems that I've had for however long would end up in a solution. And after a certain amount of time, I realized that more thinking was not going to bring me the peace that ultimately I was trying to find. And I got that at a visceral level in my own life, that continually replaying the same issues over and over again was not going to be the answer to a kind of freedom and peace that I was looking for. And then I started playing with different ways to not go down the rabbit hole, to how do I step away from that same dialogue my mind is generating. If you could just figure this out, you'd be okay. How could I get free from that? And I hope to offer that. And I've heard from people that, you know, are readers of the book that I have offered that. A way to say the way to peace is not through another round, another trip down the rabbit hole with this same problem.
You mentioned in the beginning, Nancy, of meditation and separating the thought from the mind, that you are not your own thoughts. And that seems to be an art form that is has been lost, especially in the last 20 years or so. And versus that perennial argument that comes up of being able to separate the art from the artist, that the artist may do something and thus we should never consume their art, but there should be a separation between the person and the thought.
We are not our thoughts. That is the fundamental discovery that we make in any kind of meditative process where, you know, we're trained from the time we're born to believe that we are our thoughts, we are our opinions, we are our beliefs, we are all this sort of ticker tape going on in our mind. But what happens is when you just turn the lens on your own mind and you start witnessing your mind, you hear the radio station playing in your mind, and something fundamental shifts where your identity, who you are, becomes the listener to the thoughts, the witness to the thoughts. The thoughts are happening. We don't ever make thoughts go away, you know, just like, I don't know, the pancreas pumps out insulin or whatever part of our body is making and doing what it does. The mind makes thoughts. The idea is not to make the thoughts positive. It's not to make them go away. It's to separate from them so that, again, we're not so attached to them. We're not so identified with them. They can happen. They can happen and they will happen. But what do we as the listener of them, do we want to believe them? Because you have a thought doesn't mean it's true. Because you have a thought doesn't mean you're the one responsible for that thought. My goodness, we would not create most of the thoughts that we have. You know, part of the difficulty with the current self-help movement and the whole positive thought movement is that it continues a relationship with our thoughts that is essentially a war. We have to get our thoughts to be the right thoughts. be positive thoughts, to be, well, that still imagines that we are them, that our mood is determined by them, that the content of them determines the content of our life. That's false. Our thoughts can be firing away and doing all sorts of crazy things, but we're the one over here watching them. When we get in that new identity and we really wake up to that, it's a different level of freedom. We're not dependent upon the content of the thought. My goodness, we need a deeper freedom than that.
Can't Stop Thinking, How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. We're talking to the author, Nancy Collier. Nancy, you mentioned something kind of beautiful that I never really thought about. The brain is an organ, mm-hmm. just like our kidneys, just like our heart. It mm-hmm. has a function. Thoughts are a function of the brain. But I guess maybe it's a Western way of viewing the brain that somehow, like, the brain is the only organ that we have voluntary control over, and really, we don't.
That's a myth. That's made up. We don't have. Think about, I had somebody in my office yesterday, and she said that every time that she gets on the train track, she hears, you know, you're going to push somebody in, right? Mm. Does she come up with that? She's a very happy young woman with lots going on in her. No, that is when we disidentify from the content, you know, we're not so responsible for our thoughts. We're not the possessor of them. They happen. They happen. So we treat them with a lot more lightness. Oh, look at that crazy thought. I like to give them names, you know, the worrier thoughts or the grievance thinker or the catastrophic thinker, right? We have all of these sort of different threads in our mind, but we're the one listening or not listening. I mean, that becomes a beautiful art when, heard that thought before, not so interesting. Oh, you know, you're trying to terrify me, or you're trying to pull me down the rabbit hole and say, you know, well, if I prepare for every possible solution, then, you know, I'll be okay when it happens. No, what thoughts really do is they kidnap our present moment. What they do is they have us in the future and in the past and, you know, creating a narrative about what's happening now, adding all sorts of storylines onto it. But what we're never in is just what's happening right now, because we're lost in a storyline in our mind, right? We have a pain in our foot, let's say. But within 30 seconds, that pain in the foot has become a terminal disease, or it's become a self-attack that we didn't go running this morning, or who knows what, some narrative. But thoughts pull us out of, right now you have a pain in your foot. That's what you have. And that, to me, was ultimately the tragedy of it, is we never get to be in our life because we're constructing a story made of thoughts out of the material we have to work with, which is the now.
I actually have a pain in my foot. You're making me really worried that it might be more serious than just a minor sprain. But
I shared my inner catastrophizer with you. But it is really the human condition that we don't stay where we are with just what is. We just distort everything with this narrative. Of course, in our narrative, we're the star of the show, the director, the writer. But we're missing out on what's actually happening.
There's a lot to unpack there. So why does the brain produce all these thoughts then? What is the purpose of a thought?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. So now we're into more of an existential question, which is, in part, you have to imagine the mind. The mind doesn't know that we are more than it. So again, we come from this compassionate perspective, which is the monkey mind, this kind of a monkey jumping around lunatic. It imagines that if it doesn't keep itself alive and it lives by thinking, that we won't exist. I think, therefore I am. Descartes started the whole damn mess. But so if we don't keep a problem, you know, in our teeth and keep chewing on it and keep some issue going that we can keep rehashing, who are we? Where are we? Right? The way we remind ourselves of ourselves is through thinking. But what happens over time, as you start doing the practices in the book, and maybe if you have any kind of a meditative or contemplative practice, is you start experiencing these gaps. First, there may not be like there are any gaps, but then there are these spaces where you realize, oh my gosh, I haven't been thinking. And at first, the monkey mind goes into a kind of existential terror. It says, well, where was I? Oh my God, was I alive? Did I exist in that space? And of course, we go running around and telling everybody, I had a gap. You know, I had a moment where I wasn't thinking. We're always reestablishing that self, right? I exist. I exist. And we do it through thinking. But as you get better and at this practice and sort of get on the bicycle more and more, you can experience yourself as existing without thinking. So you start to feel what we call kind of a presence. There's a sense of presence, but the mind is not so busy and chaotic, and we're not experiencing self through thought. Once you get the hang of that, it's a little less scary to not have a problem to hash out or not have to create a narrative in our mind, because we can still feel, oh, we're here. We're just not here as only mind.
There's a bit of an existential reprieve.
That's it. That's it. Exactly. And that place where we are here, but not by way of thinking, is actually a place of peace. And, you know, one way we get there, it's sort of paradoxical, is that we think that the way to peace is by knowing more. From the time we're born, we're told, you know, thinking is a good thing. Our parents, if we do something wrong, they say, think, why were you not thinking, right? It's seen as an answer. But often we find this place of refuge by surrendering to, hey, I don't know. I actually don't know the answer. Let me live in the question. I don't know. So I don't need to put more time into thinking about it. I can just say, I don't know. And that's a sort of portal or doorway to this place of existing, but not through thinking, is surrender. It's kind of a path of surrender. There's an I don't know that can be a place where I can be comfortably okay.
It does seem, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking back of memories in high school and middle school, and you see all these posters of think and use your mind, and it seems like the only path to success is by obsessively thinking about everything.
Exactly, exactly. And that is a really, really damaging message, because again, it places all of our eggs in the thinking basket. And it makes us also to blame if life includes difficulty, which, you know, as I think we know by the time we're about eight, every life includes difficulty. And so it holds up this idea that you just haven't thought about it enough. And then we get to a certain point where we realize, no, actually, there's no answer yet that's presented itself. There isn't. I have to live in this space of not knowing. And, you know, part of during this pandemic that's been so challenging for people is to be in this, I don't know. I don't know when I'm going to be able to make vacation plans, or I don't know when this darn virus is going to clear up, or if. And that's a space that, you know, if we really want to find peace, we've got to learn how to take our seat comfortably in discomfort, in not knowing. But our reverence, our idea that knowing is going to bring us peace, is fundamentally flawed. It often doesn't. Often, this is the paradox. It's by saying, I can't know, I surrender to the mystery, that we, oh, okay, I don't have to know. It's not my failing if I don't know. That's just part of the deal. And I can rest here. I can rest in not knowing. You know, sometimes we've had these issues, I don't know, with our partner, with a boss, with a somebody, where we've gone over it and over it and over it, and the answer is, I can't know. I don't know. And that's got to be okay. And when it gets okay, we have a different kind of freedom.
It's a scary thought, though. Isn't that why, maybe one reason why religion was formed, of to give us some answer of what lies beyond the sure. length of our knowledge?
Sure. And yet, again, of course, you know, much of religion also was formed to find a route to God, to find an experience of ourselves that is beyond this little mind, this separate self. But yes, to fill in all these answers, right, what we're really doing is saying, I can't bear the mystery. I can't bear the mystery. So here's my, you know, map for what is ultimately so not knowable. My God, we're on this planet spinning around in a galaxy. You know, it's all so mysterious. But, you know, we micromanage everything because if I can know it, I can control it. Mm-hmm. And if I can't control it, then I'm not safe. Right? That's sort of at the very basic. We're trying to feel safe all the time. And to feel safe, we have this link with knowing and control. But it's surrendering to, hey, guess what? I control what I can control, but I turn the rest over. I am not in control, ultimately. You know, that's funny enough where real peace comes in.
That really resonates. I have OCD, and I really struggled in high school with it, especially when it came to self-image. And counting calories specifically, counting obsessively, I found such peace in that. And then I realized, like, all the anxiety and how if I messed up my numbers by even, let's say, 200 calories, I suddenly would just go into a tantrum of mind. And it was all because I just wanted to know. And that's where I found peace. But that was a mistake.
You know, it's such a struggle with OCD because there really is a belief that if I can control it, and down to, you know, as you're saying, just these really obsessive details, that I will be okay. And so we have to sort of, our heart has to break for the real intention, which is to stay safe, which is to stay loved, to stay belonging, to stay accepted. And it's just that our idea of the way to get there is faulty, right? But we can't blame the underlying drive, which is to be included, to belong, to be safe, right? And, you know, when there's a lot of anxiety, we do go to our sort of our go-to places, which is more thought, more control, overthink it, you know, take it through another round. You know, we can, down at the bottom of all this rubble, there's an answer. You know, there's a golden ticket there that will keep us safe, right? So we have to sort of untether the control piece from the safe. Real safe is when we find a kind of trust, if you will, in not knowing, a kind of trust in I turn it over. I'll do my best, but I turn it over. That's where real safety comes from, not by more control.
Sounds very similar to the ideas of Stoicism.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think, you know, for most people, you know, what we want to be careful with, right, because, again, remember the mind wants to turn everything into a story. It wants to turn everything into, it's a bit like this, or it's like this, and we all do it, right? But we want to keep this practice very, very real and not, it's very easy to go to another rabbit hole and say, oh, and then we're lost in another land of ideas. Oh, it's like this or it's like this. Then we're, again, far away from direct experience. All of this practice we're talking about in the book is really about bringing us back to right now. Right now. So not another sort of interesting food for the mind. Yeah, let's, you know, it's like this or it's like that. Come back to now. And we're all guilty of it, right? We love to go off into our, we're always having a conversation about reality, basically, ideas about it, but we're never in reality.
Can't Stop Thinking, How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. Nancy Collier is the author. Nancy, there's one last, maybe larger question to this. There seems to be a bit of a paradox. I think a lot of people probably at one point or another in their lives have gone through a flow state of where they're not really thinking about anything and something magical only happens. Sometimes it happens in writing or creativity. Someone will ask you, well, how'd you even come up with it? I don't know. I don't remember anything that happened. But in order to reach that point, there is a base of knowledge that seems to be required. So what exactly is the paradox here?
Yeah, it's such a funny balance, right? Because we practice, and then we throw away everything we know. And we let the magic happen, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes, the discipline here is, you've got to turn the lens on your own mind. You've got to do that. You can't just keep believing all your thoughts and following them because they appear. Because you have a thought, it doesn't mean you have to think it. So we have to do the very hard work that is the practice of disidentifying with thought. But once we get the hang of that, we start doing that, doing the hard work of that and the practice of that, right? Then we can kind of turn it over and we start to notice all these spaces where we're just being. We're not thinking, we're not doing, we're just being. We're just actually experiencing the moment. So it's the both. That's the paradox, right? We call it effortless effort because you put in the effort, but then comes this sort of effortless state where you're not thinking and you're in a state, I would dare even say, of almost joy. Because the thoughts aren't there reminding you of all of these things or doing whatever it is they're doing that's distracting you. So the beauty in a flow state is that the separation between you and what's happening disappears. So you are just the full experience. You are just it. Mm. And things happen there that the sense is, I didn't do that. I didn't create that. Right, you didn't because you weren't separate. It wasn't a separate ego there saying, yeah, let me come up with this. Let me, you know, as much as we're all about ego in this culture, we're all dying to disappear from ego. We're all dying to join the present moment so that there isn't a separation. And that's what some people consider the experience of spirituality, where the separation between you and reality disappears. And then reality is just happening, not to you, and you're not creating it. It's all one thing. And that's this blessed state we call flow. And that's what we're all trying to get to. But the mind is so afraid of disappearing into the experience because it doesn't know that there's something larger. It thinks it has to survive by saying, me, it's happening to me. Relief is when the me dies.
That was beautiful, Nancy. Thank you so much. Can't Stop Thinking. The book is fantastic, but are there any other resources that people can use, a podcast or anything that they can connect with?
Sure, yeah. So my website, which is nancycollier.com, 1L, has tons of information about, you know, I'm on tons and tons of podcasts and radio and TV and stuff. And so there's lots of resources on my site. So they can go there. And if anyone has questions too, or wants to sort of have a deeper conversation about it, they can also reach me through my website.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for joining us today. Any final words you'd like to include, or?
I would just say that, you know, the whole way that you've been living of just being thought and in love with thought and identified with thought, there really is a different way of living. And it's with real freedom. And it's possible and it actually happens if we commit to this and set our intention to do this. There's a totally different way of experiencing life, which is joyful and ever present. So I just offer that as really a message of hope, and it's doable.
And I think that's all that needs to be said. Well, thank you. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Nancy Collier is the author of Can't Stop Thinking, How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. This interview was originally recorded Friday, September 24th of 2021.